to one more episode of The Brand Called You. Today we have a very exciting entrepreneur, a friend for a couple of decades, Sanjay Kapoor. Sanjay, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ashutosh.
Sanjay, you've built an absolutely amazing business in luxury products. But before I get to your luxury experience, which a lot of our listeners and viewers would want to see, talk to us about your early career as a banker, and then what made you enter the luxury space, and before that, what made you become an entrepreneur?
Well, I think in the early 90s, when I graduated from business school, came back to India and joined Citibank, it was a great year and a bit with them. I think after 1 year, I remember getting Employee of the Year award, and I said, wow, I definitely don't deserve this, and I didn't do much to get this, so it means maybe I'm just not fit out for the corporate world. So I just quit. Mm-hmm. I quit with no business plan, unlike today's bright youths who've got all these plans with them. I quit thinking I'd become a garment exporter because I generally saw too many garment exporters driving very large cars. One thing led to the next, and after many months in Europe with no business, I was bust. And we got our first order of ties. And that's how the business started. So actually, I did not start in the luxury business, but I started selling ties and scarves all over the world in the 90s.
Wow.
And that's how Genesis evolved. In fact, the name came out of a poster that I had in business school. There was this black and white picture of a flower blooming, and it said Genesis. I just called the company Genesis.
Amazing. Amazing.
So not too much thought behind it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting you say this because I started my first book, The Buck Stops Here, from the day I left the corporate world. And I said that I woke up on 1st of April 2003 and my Outlook calendar was empty. I didn't know who to talk to. I had no appointments. And it looks like you started exactly the same way when you started from scratch all over again.
I just followed my heart and I just said I wanted to do something myself. I had no fixed plans. We didn't have a business plan. I just wanted to work for myself. Simple as that.
Mm. And you were in Bombay in those days?
I was in Delhi, actually.
In Delhi. So, talk to us a little bit after your journey selling ties and scarves. Today, you've got one of the finest array of international luxury brands. And I remember going into Emporio Mall, and I think every second shop was your brand. So how did that start? Which was your first brand, and how did you evolve it? Because you're across multiple categories.
So actually, in a nutshell, I actually give you a little background. I think I had three phases to business, right? So in the 90s, we sold ties and scarves all over the world. When I said we, I had a co-founder in the business, also who used to work at Citibank. In the early 2000s, we took over the Satyapal business, and that was the second phase of business. And we got into luxury in the year 2008. Mm-hmm. So our first brand was actually Canali. And we got into it. They had another partner who was running their Bombay business but did not want to expand the store. So we opened a store in Hyderabad. We didn't know much about the business. The first opening was really the opening of Emporio. And you know, here it is 11 years later with about 17, 18 brands in the portfolio. Mm. But it's been an interesting journey from year one where rent was higher than sales, to a very nice portfolio which makes a decent amount of money.
Wonderful. And what goes into managing the multiple brands and multiple you know, countries, languages, work styles? They're all converging into your office and, of course, your team's office.
So actually, it's not as difficult as it makes itself out to be. No. So actually, you know, if you look at it, what are we doing? We're actually selling to the evolved Indian consumer, right? So as we grew our business, as we were growing the Satyapal business, we said, here's a brand that we own. Should we take this brand out to multiple people across the world? Or what do we understand? I think we understood the Indian consumer. I would say that's really understanding the dynamics of what makes people buy. Mm. So instead of expanding the brand, we decided to bring other brands that we could sell into India. Mm. So at the end of it, you're selling to a well-traveled, well-heeled Indian customer. Mm. There's loads of information available out there. A customer that's price sensitive, fashion sensitive, and knows information at his fingertips, his or her fingertips. So yes, these are brands based across primarily Europe and the United States. So it's not that difficult. It's a you know, it's sold to an Indian clientele that is well-traveled, well-healed. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to really explain the brand too much. But on an ongoing basis, there are new customers coming in. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the exciting part. Running a business in India is a lot of firefighting, a lot of hiccups, right? Every few years, it sets a new base, a new dynamic. Correct. You're aware of it. You've run a business out here. And I think that's the exciting part of it. You can say challenging, I call it exciting.
Because, you know, I worked with two international brands, one American, one French. And it was a challenge to manage expectations of the brand owners. You know, why is the revenue not moving up? Why aren't you opening more stores? And I noticed with your plethora of brands, that was the first question when I was looking at, you know, all you've done. I said, how does Sanjay manage, you know, 30, 40, 50 partners? But obviously, it's not that difficult.
You know, here's the thing, right? So I actually call ourselves as brand custodians, right? So as a brand custodian, we've got to do what's good for the brand. Of course, when luxury started in India in, you know, 2007, 2008, a lot of people thought India was the next China. And I thought, in my mind, India is not the next China. India is going to be the next India.
Correct.
You know, you can't really compare demographics and the way China built out its retail business like India has done. Mm. Of course, we like to make that comparison, and everybody says, you know, India is 5 years behind China or 10 years behind China. I don't even think the comparison exists, right? So I think you have to be realistic to what our market can take. Infrastructure has been and will continually be a problem in the Indian retail environment. Having said that, I think the omni-channel e-commerce business is fast catching up in India. It was a whole topic itself on its own. But I think we've had some very good partnerships with brands. And I always put myself in the shoe of the brand to see how they answer it. Correct. At the end of this, we're not doing this for charity. We have to make money, just as the brand partners to make money.
Yeah.
Right? So I think if you play out those dynamics correctly and you're transparent and honest to your business, it will work well.
So tell me, one of the challenges that I used to face was, and you said, you know, you have a very, very well-heeled or well-understood, an audience that, or a client base that understands international brands. Challenge we used to face was that pricing in India was significantly higher than price in the US or Europe.
Right.
Do you also have something similar?
So, you know, when luxury started in India, typically at that time, we would be 20-25% higher than home country. Mm-hmm. Today, across most of our brands, we're within 5-10% of home country pricing. When I mean home country, typically continental Europe is the cheapest.
Correct.
Right? Not necessarily London. So we're significantly cheaper than Singapore, Dubai, Bangkok, Hong Kong, pretty much on par with UK, if not plus minus 5%. So I fully agree with you. Indian customers are very price sensitive. Mm. We would carry suitcase in, we would carry cars back in our suitcase if we could, right?
Yeah.
The richer they get, the more price sensitive they are.
Correct.
And actually, if you break up the portfolio, women are more price sensitive than men. You know, you're selling a finely tailored suit. Men are slightly less sensitive. They've got to get the trouser lens done, the sleeve lens done. So 5-6% here and there doesn't bother them. Women will walk into a refined store and call the store manager in Sloane Street in London and get the price there and calculate the tax refund and figure out their 3% off and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, our challenges, we had probably 3 or 4 challenges when we started. Pricing was the biggest challenge. And today we have taken care of that. Like I said, we're within 5 or 10% of home country. And that works with rational pricing, both by the brand and by us. Other challenges that we faced when we got into the space was, is the range genuine? I think that people figured out very quickly that if you got the brand out there, it is a genuine product. Is it a wide enough range? Is it a new enough range? I think those are easier challenges to deal with. People figure out that, you know, if you have a brand name out there, they're not going to put their brand name if it's not a genuine original product sold at the same time as it's sold in London, New York, Paris. So pricing was a challenge, but we took care of it fairly quickly.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that, in fact, but people who do know that, you know, slowly shifting. Our largest competition in this business is really not other brands, but it's people shopping overseas.
Correct. So staying in luxury, I've been reading a few articles and, you know, the luxury market in the last few years seems to be under little pressure because the serious challenges are in China. And demonetization must have had a challenge, must have had an impact on India as well. And I was talking to some of these big brands overseas, and the two big markets were India and China, and somehow that has had an impact. What is your thought on that?
So actually, I'd be surprised if any brand said India was a large market, right? India is a rounding error in most luxury brands. I don't think India constitutes even 1% for most large global brands in terms of retail sales now.
Okay.
They all look at it as a strategic market in the future because it's one of the few markets that's growing.
Correct.
I think China had a rough challenge till about a year ago. In fact, if you see now the reports of the last year, luxury has been on pretty much on fire.
Really? Okay.
Look at LVMH, look at the Kering Group. The numbers have been very supportive. Yeah, up to about a year ago, China clamped down on bribery and all that stuff. And China did slow down, but China's bounced back with a bang. But on the flip side, I would say India is one of the few countries that's growing. We're still doing high, early teen, double-digit growth, like for like, which is really the only relevant growth compared to most markets. I mean, I know the US has bounced back, but even in the Western world, if you grow at 3%, that's considered fantastic.
Absolutely.
So really, when you see that compounding era of growth and you have a young clientele, a young consumer that's evolving quickly, I think India's got a great future. So I wouldn't be worried about that.
Okay.
At least I'm not.
Okay. So, you know, you referred to e-commerce a little while ago, and as a fellow retailer, at least I was a former retailer. What is the impact of e-commerce on luxury retail? I know it's had a big impact on every other form of retail.
So I think a lot of people use the internet actually for information today. In the Western world, you are seeing transactions happen digitally. You're seeing a small amount of transactions happen in India. Historically, in India, digital commerce started as a discounting mechanism to clear stocks. And that's a surefire way of killing your brand. Slowly and surely, people will move the digital way. It's a matter of time. And actually, for a country like ours, it's bound to happen.
Right.
Where's the infrastructure? We're not China with a country where the government is going to say, here's 1,600 acres of land, demolish it, open five malls and four schools and 2,000 flats. It's never going to happen, right? And outside, let's say five, six cities, where's the infrastructure to put these luxury stores?
Yeah.
And in every large town, you have 5,000, 10,000 very wealthy families that can afford this, right? So I think for our business, it's going to be omni-channel, which is a mixture of digital and offline, and they're going to mix together. And I think it's imperative. I think it's great for our business. Once you have become a customer of the brand, you're familiar with sizes, you will use the internet initially for information and tomorrow to buy. So I think it's just a matter of when and not if.
And how's technology doing on luxury? I was retail. I was in Singapore, then I was also in Seoul. And you know, you walk into a shop and instead of trying out the design, you stand in front of a screen and
needless to say,
it tries out all these things. Then you look at the
technology.
Do we have that in India now?
Or? Not yet, but we'll get there. So technology touches us in every phase of life, right? So you probably went to one of those magic mirrors where you can touch a garment and impersonate a garment on you, right? It's all over. So technology tracks how people shop, where they shop, when you enter a store, what if you browse that, right? So luckily, our partners in this business, our majority shareholders are so strong in technology. So we're inheriting a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
So that's a good point of that.
Okay. So that actually brings me, you know, you provide an interesting segue into the next question. I'm assuming you're saying your partners are Reliance.
That's correct.
Reliance is now such a large player in the retail space. And I didn't know they had got into luxury retail. Once again, such a large organization, but with so many brand owners where tremendous amount of attention to detail is required. How does that relationship work?
Actually, we have had a wonderful relationship with them. Obviously, when they came on board as partners, it was a little unnerving in the beginning, but I must say they did everything to make the team and me personally very comfortable.
Right.
So there was a company called Reliance Brands that also started the luxury space around the same time I did. They acquired a significant stake in our business. And as I got more comfortable, I encouraged them to take out all my other PE partners. So it's really them and us. And, you know, the amount of technology, processes and skills is brought to the table.
Yeah.
It's actually perfect. You know, I always say that, you know, we've grown our business from X to here, but how do we take it to the next level? You know, and this business also requires deep pockets, lots of technology. And, you know, with Reliance Brands, we are as entrepreneurial as an entrepreneurial business, yet we can be Reliance when we need to. So it's a it's an ideal mix in the way we are structured, right? So and this is not the Goliath business that you think of.
I understand.
We're as nimble, as free-footed as we need to be.
Absolutely. And because of your own growth and probably because of Reliance, you now got some 800 doors that you have worked.
Yeah, collectively, between Reliance Brands and the erstwhile Genesis, we have a whole bunch of stores. That's correct.
That's a very, very large presence in the country.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so now I'm going to move our discussion to something a little more personal.
Sure.
Sanjay, you've been in business. You've got, you travel a lot, it's family. Two separate questions. Number one is, what gets you going every morning?
Okay.
And then after that, how do you manage your work-life balance?
So you know what, here's what I say, right? If you can wake up 8 out of 10 days with springs on your feet, you're blessed.
Yeah.
Okay. And genuinely, you know, I don't have a preset goal that I want.
Correct.
500 stores or X number of turnover. For me, really, I truly, genuinely enjoy my business. And I think that's what gets me going. I know it sounds really cliche, but every brand gets me as excited, whether you have 18 or you have 19 or you've got 20. I think every brand, every challenge gets me as excited as day one. And I think it's a joy just to keep accomplishing stuff. So for me, life is a journey. There's no end destination. I know it sounds really cliche, but that's the truth.
No, that's fantastic.
And you know, if you love what you do, and if it's not a chore, right? It's like everybody knows a parent loves his child, right? If you enjoy spending an hour playing with your child, then you're not going to say, how can you do it every day, right?
Correct.
So for me, that's it.
Correct.
My business was my first baby, continues to be my first baby. Of course, I have two beautiful children now. And it's just a joy to see it grow, flourish, and take new avatars.
Wonderful. And how do you manage your work-life balance?
So, you know,
are you back home every weekend? Or
you know, I don't travel that much. And, you know, honestly, because I have young kids, I take multiple holidays every year. And I think that's a real bonding time with me and the kids. And there's an internal system that helps you make your work-life balance. First of all, you know, when your business is part of you, my work is my life. Right. And I wouldn't want it any other way.
Sure.
Right. So even, you know, for me, work does not mean physically sitting on your table from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. You could be sitting in a beach somewhere, but your mind is ticking. You may have an idea.
Yeah.
It's also about giving me time to yourself.
Correct.
At the end of it, I think, you know, the largest businesses or the most successful businesses are those with the greatest people. For me, the largest asset is our team.
Yeah.
Our team is what really creates it.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think I've ever faced a challenge in a work-life balance. You know, for me, if I feel I'm burning out, I just blow off a weekend or blow off a day. You know, there's always a way. I think you have to calibrate that yourself. I've never looked at it as a challenge.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So you spoke about in the beginning that you had a partner, you know, when you founded Genesis. What is the advantage or disadvantage of having or not having a partner?
So actually, when I founded Genesis, I had one co-founder. And then when we got into the Satyapal business, I had a second co-founder. So I would say there are loads of advantages in having a co-founder, partner. It's someone to brainstorm with, it's someone to share a risk. And, you know, at the end of it, sometimes it gets lonely at the top.
Correct.
I mean, I do remember when I was a banker and you'd just be brainstorming with other people. So sometimes when you are your own boss, that's where it gets lonely. Right. Of course, the risk reward ratios change when you have another co-founder or partner or two. So it's a tricky one. Of course, having a partner is a twin-edged sword. It's understanding the sensibilities of the other person. Done correctly, it's a huge plus. Done correctly, 1 + 1 = 11 and not 2.
Correct.
Done badly, it's negative.
Wonderful.
And, you know, that's something you can spend hours and hours talking about.
I agree. Okay, next question to you is that I ask all my guests. Tell us about your biggest learning from your biggest failure.
So, you know, if I reflect back, at least in business, my biggest failures, I would not say would have been business failures, but failures with people in business. Okay, when either I did not handle someone correctly or did not understand the pain or the grief or the differences going on in that person's mind without getting into specifics. And it's happened a couple of times. So those were my biggest failures. So, you know, losing a business, losing an account, losing money, it's part of the journey, right? We've gone close to being belly up 3 times in the last 25 years. But so I think not being able to understand the human being, and it's happened multiple times. Mm-hmm. And each time I've sat back and reflected and could have handled it differently. And the answer has been yes. Mm-hmm. I think human emotions, maybe I didn't put myself in the other person's shoe to understand what that person was going through. Mm-hmm. And that's a failure for me, a huge failure. Mm-hmm. And I hope I've learned from each one.
Okay. Thank you. One last question. India is at an amazing stage of our journey as entrepreneurs, and the government is giving a huge push to startup entrepreneurs. A lot of young people are wanting to start up their own ventures and so on. You've been the quintessential entrepreneur who's started 3 successful businesses, and as you said, have had challenges in your businesses and come out of it, and are now leading the pack in the luxury space. What would your advice be to young startup entrepreneurs?
Honestly, again, it sounds cliche, but follow your dreams, right? If you have a dream, go out, make it come true. Be true to yourself and don't waste time. So, you know, I remember in my initial days as an entrepreneur, I'd meet several professional friends of mine and say, you know what, we want to become entrepreneurs too, but let's wait 5 years to get a bit of a nest egg.
Correct.
And then 5 years would come and say, let's wait 2 years more. You're never going to become an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
If you can't take the risk and you can't be gutsy and ballsy about it, you're not going to be an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
Right? So whether you're an entrepreneur working for yourself, or there are many opportunities to become an entrepreneur working for somebody as an entrepreneur.
Correct.
If you've got to do it now. Take the risk. If there's no risk, there's no reward.
Yeah.
There's no joy. Do it today and, you know, just follow your dreams.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Sanjay.
Thanks,
Ashutosh. It's been great chatting with you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.